America's News Talk is The Pledge. It's Gene Parker and Nancy DeBoer, joined by Congressman Bill Huizenga. Good morning, Congressman, and welcome to Your Voice.
Gene, well, it's good to be with you and meet you. And Nancy, good seeing you as always.
Great. Thanks for being here.
Nice to have you here. You're back from Washington in the district at home. And how's it feel to be home?
Good. It feels really good. Yeah. As I tell people, it's like returning from the land of Oz every so often. You know, there's hints of reality, but not always full reality.
Yeah.
Well, there's a lot of people who think they're the wizard, Nancy.
Have you found the yellow brick road?
It leads right back to Zealand here.
That's good.
It's funny how that goes. Congressman, I don't know enough about you yet. I'm just learning about you, but I do know that you work in Washington and your family is still here in Zealand. You didn't decide to move the family up and uproot them to go to Washington. How come?
Well, and it works different ways, and it's for different people. They have to have it work for their families. I have some friends that came in at the same time, and they homeschooled or they did some other things, and it was an easy transition. And they one way or the other, you lose family time, and do you want to try to have that made up? We just made the decision that when I go to Washington, I am full out all Washington. I'm concentrated on what's happening there. My day starts about 6 and ends somewhere between 10 and 11 o'clock at night. And I'm able to obviously sneak a phone call in here and there back home and say goodnight to the kids and that kind of thing. But we really sort of concentrate on Washington. And then when I'm here on weekends, I can be a little more into it as a dad and as a husband and during that district time, and sort of the opposite for some of my colleagues that have moved their families out there. They get done with votes and they're not going out and going to the dinner or going to the reception or whatever else. They're heading home, and the challenge for that then is when we are on a district work week, they've got to get back out here or out to the district, and their families aren't. They're back in Washington. So, it's different things can work. Neither one's frankly very family friendly.
It's a sacrifice to serve in Washington.
So you see that commercial with the iPad, right? You know, the one I'm talking about where the dad is not there and the little girl is performing the cello or whatever on stage. Is that you?
Yes.
Sometimes?
Yeah, we have done that. My kids go to Zealand Christian, and oldest two are at Holland Christian. And I've seen a few band concerts, some Pinewood Derbies, lots of different things via FaceTime. I've been able to step out for dinners, out at dinners, or it's something like that, and just be able to check in. And it's amazing. Technology helps that. It doesn't quite replace physically being there. Yeah. But I'll never forget the first time my son was doing Pinewood Derby, and he won. I was watching on FaceTime, and I was able to watch all the runs, and he came running over to my wife Natalie, and she said, tell Dad. And he turned around, and he just grabbed the phone, and he was just beaming, Dad, I want it. You know? And then, it was like 5-6 seconds, and then he goes off running away. But at least I was able to be a part of that and to see that joy. Exactly.
I know, it's just such a little window of time. You want to catch it.
Yeah, and it's understandable. In the old days, people moved their families out, whether it was Jerry Ford or whoever else, because you didn't have the kind of travel choices that that we have now. And I'm ticked that I don't have a direct flight Grand Rapids into Washington, but that's still a heck of a lot shorter than what they used to have to
Southwest, do. Isn't Southwest going to help you? Is that
they're going into Baltimore.
You're going into Baltimore. Okay.
Yeah, there's a direct that goes into Baltimore. There's a direct that goes now into Dulles. There's some serious travel to get either out to Dulles or BWI. So either way, it's either I'm waiting in Detroit, connecting through onto National or taking that drive out from Dulles or wherever else.
So even though you're back home, it's not all a vacation, as you met with some constituents this week at a town hall meeting in Zeeland, right? And how did that go?
Yeah, we've had actually a very active couple of weeks here. I am going to do a week of family time vacation. I don't think anybody would fault us for trying to do that.
You need that.
Yeah, it's we're humans too, and you got to have that recharge time.
And right.
Yep. Yeah, and so we've been all over the district. So with redistricting, just to remind folks, we go from Holland all the way up to Ludington, and then we take in all the western outskirts of Grand Rapids, Walker, Wyoming, Granville, Kentwood. And doing a lot of time up north. I've been in Ludington a number of times, Muskegon. In fact, I was just up in Muskegon last evening as well, and all around the district, and that's how you get reconnected. We've done an agriculture town hall meeting where we've been talking with farmers. Their main issue that they wanted to talk about was immigration and how it affects agriculture.
Right.
The town hall meeting that you were referencing here in Zeeland, we had about 200 people there. It was everything from the chairman of the Ottawa County Democrat Party and the former Obama for America, which has now become become this nonprofit Organizing for America or Organizing for Action.
And is there a choir with that?
Yeah. We had the Lyndon LaRouche folks. We had the Tea Party Patriots and the Campaign for Liberty. It was a diverse crowd, shall we say? Oh yes. Yeah, and it got a little tense. It was democracy in action. It was great. There were some times I felt like I was the ringmaster ringmaster and referee. That's how you get to know what's on people's mind and what's important to them, and that's the idea of this district work period, is to be able to do that, get back home, really try to reconnect with folks back in the district.
So you're also kind of Mr. Mom this week. You mentioned that you're kind of taking things at home, care of things at home,
yeah,
too, right?
Yeah, Natalie and my daughter Allie are in Central America, in Honduras, doing a clean water mission trip with Turning Point School of Dance. There's a whole group from Turning Point, and my daughter dances ballet there, and it's been phenomenal. We're following it on Facebook, and what's amazing is that even out in the jungles of Honduras, you still have Facebook. it's like, me would think that there'd be somewhere around the world that that you could escape that.
Here's
but
my pet slot.
Beautiful country and beautiful people, and obviously a lot of poverty, and those girls, mostly girls, are really learning some tough life lessons, and what a wonderful way to do it. But to literally go out and be the hands and feet of Christ, and to be playing with these kids and to teaching them. Some obviously with the water issue, teaching them some sanitary ways of getting clean water and that kind of thing.
Well, it's literally giving them the cup of cold water, water, and also sharing the gospel.
Yeah, probably. That's right. So we've had to sort of modify my schedule a little bit this week, and
keep people alive.
We've got grandma's filling in, doing some duty, aunt's doing some duty,
still trying to get
a few meetings in and things like this. So.
Yeah. So, Mr. Mom, we had a question about immigration, actually. Something came up locally. There's farmers who have great crops this year with apples.
Yeah.
Tons and tons of apples,
finally.
A lot more than last year, finally.
Wonderful.
But the problem is there are no migrant workers to pick them because of last year's crop, which failed, and a few other issues. And some farmers are saying that those other issues are immigration issues.
Yes. Yeah, that's exactly what I'm hearing from them. In fact, I was just watching the news last night, and one of the Grand Rapids news stations had a farmer talking about that exact issue. Obviously, when you don't have a crop to pick, like was what happened last year, those folks had to go find someplace else.
Yeah, we have to market for migrants, right?
Yeah,
they all go somewhere else.
That's exactly right. I mean, they're looking for work as well, and for some of them, they go, hey, this is better, or it was closer, or it was something different in a different place, and so they may not be returning, and obviously the sort of the overall conversation that we are having about immigration here in the United States is also affecting that. There's a couple of states like Georgia and others that really, really clamp down. Whether they're documented or not, there's a lot of those folks who are in the fields who are very nervous, and they feel the brunt of it, the farmers as well as those workers, and so it's something that we have to resolve. I don't believe that we've got the luxury of doing nothing, of just leaving it as it is. And I've had some folks say, well, you know, we shouldn't be doing any kind of immigration reform. And I look at that and it's like, really? I mean, do you think what we're doing right now is successful? Because we've got somewhere around 11 to maybe as high as 15 million people that have crossed the border that are here. Either they came with a visa and overstayed the visa, or they never had one originally. That to me is not a bar that we can measure success by. Of course, we need to do some sort of reform, and we've got to make it a system that is going to work for the high skill workers, the H-1B visa workers. That's my brother-in-law, who happens to be Canadian and is an engineer here in town at Gentex. We need those folks. We also need the low skill workers coming in to be able to do the work that, frankly, a lot of locals wouldn't or won't do anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and to be fair, on the other side, you also need those folks to get into the system, start paying taxes, yep, and start, you know, I mean, some of the benefits that they get being here, frankly, they don't pay for. A lot of folks would say that.
Yeah, there are a lot of folks that would say that. And here's what one of those dirty little secrets that are out there. There's a lot of folks who will pay into the system knowing that they'll never collect out of that, because if they are using a falsified document that for Social Security or whatever else, those taxes are going in. But they can't get drawn out directly. There's other things that they are pulling out of the system. And I think, to me, that just underscores why we need to fix it. We need to have a system that allows people to move back and forth. A lot of them would like to go back. They be with their families.
Sure.
Trust me, I get that. You know, sort of the, yeah, you're off and
yeah, you want with the migrant life.
Yeah, you little different, but yeah.
A little different.
But you have this notion of. You know, they want to come and stay, and that's not always the case. Mm-hmm. And we've got to develop that system like it used to be, where people could move back and forth more freely, not unsecured. The Canadians are very good at this. They've got some very strict times where people are checking in and when they have to be gone by, and they do allow them some freedom to move. So, like, if they're at Nancy's farm doing this job now, they're going to be able to move to Gene's farm in a couple of weeks. The U.S. government system says, no, you're supposed to be at Nancy's farm and only Nancy's farm. And then if you want to go to Gene's farm, then you got to go through another process to be approved to go do that. Mm. And that makes it very difficult, not only for you as the farm owners, but for the workers as well. So it's those kinds of things that we need to tackle.
So logic needs to prevail overall.
Nancy, that is a pretty tall order when you're expecting logic to prevail in Washington, D.C.
Back to our yellow brick road.
Yeah, but here, yeah. I mean, here's the thing, though. You know, we all come from different paradigms and different
sure.
perspectives. And,
yeah.
and Michigan is very different than Massachusetts, which is very different than Mississippi, which is very different than Montana.
Right.
And I talk about the divides that I see out in Washington, and one one of those divides is geographic. You know, for us up here in the upper Midwest, we're you know, Midwest would also be everything from Iowa to Michigan. Now, we're very different, being surrounded by the Great Lakes, and we just have a little different paradigm than what they may do. Now you go down and talk to some of my colleagues down south, or talk to some of my colleagues up in New England. My joke is nobody thinks like California. I've amended that to include nobody thinks like California or Texas, and they just have very different ideas and they kind of treat it that way. So you know that's one divide. You know, obviously people believe there is a partisan divide. You know, the Republicans or Democrats are going to beat each other up just because of the letter behind their name. And that happens a little bit, but not nearly as much as what people would anticipate. The real
divide... Is that getting better?
Well, here's why, though. Yes and no, but the real divide is that it's not partisan so much as it is philosophical, Gene. It's the proper size, role, and scope of government. You know, what do you believe is the proper role of government, and what do I believe the proper role of government? And it plays out in things like, you know, TARP. Or in stimulus spending. There are people who truly believe, one, we don't have a spending problem right now. They believe if we had just doubled the size of the stimulus package, we'd be in a much better spot. we'd be in a much better spot with the economy. And there's a lot of us who say, you know what? Maybe if we had just spent half as much on the stimulus, we'd probably be about exactly where we are right now, and we wouldn't be in as much debt as we are. You know, it's that kind of philosophical divide, and it goes everything from obviously healthcare to the Dodd-Frank Act, which is something that I deal with on a daily basis from my seat on the Financial Services Committee. That was much like the Affordable Care Act, or some joke, you know, the not so Affordable Care Act. You know, the Obamacare bill and the Dodd-Frank bill came in at about the same time. Two massive intrusions of the federal government that hadn't been traditionally in places that were regulated already. I mean, no one says healthcare wasn't regulated. No one says banking or credit unions or insurance companies weren't regulated. It just took it, you know, to an nth degree after that. But the last divide is really a generational divide. There's different expectations. My class and my generation, you know, I'm a 44. It's not like I'm that old, but I'm not 24 either.
Right.
And it's not just about whether you use Twitter and Facebook and all that stuff, but there are different expectations from people in and among even my own party, mm-hmm. and I see that conflict happen quite often as well. So there's a lot of things that we have to work through.
Yeah. Wow. Well, we're so glad you're out there and that you're coming back and that you have the values that really reflect this area and that you're willing to sacrifice to help us build a better world. So thanks so much for coming in, Bill, and thank your family for all their sacrifice as well. We really are blessed to have you in that position.
Well, and everybody's blessed that I've got a wife like Natalie and great kids who'll put up with it. And it's a joy, it's a pleasure, it's an honor to be able to do this, and we're glad we could do it. So,
Congressman Bill Huizenga, right here on Your Voice, America's News Talk, The Pledge.